I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 21st of February. Happy President's Day to you. I'm sorry I wasn't with you on Thursday of last week. My mother-in-law passed away. She was a teacher for first grade teacher for 36 years in northeastern Wisconsin. She was also a Republican. So as you can imagine, there was a good deal of talk about all that was going on in the state of Wisconsin. Many sides of the issue were expressed, and we made, because I am from a family of big sports fans, an obligatory stop at Lambeau Field on the way home, where there were also protesters. So it is everywhere in the state. She was a good woman who really was dedicated to doing the right thing and a marvelous teacher. And it is amazing to see people gather. She was 89 years old when she died, and to see people whose lives you have influenced for 36 years of teaching who were there to honor her and to honor her teaching. And it was meaningful. All right, well, this story ain't going away, is it? On this President's Day, we're going to be talking about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. Our guest writes today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there are both sides are getting together to figure out what their possible bargaining chips are. If Democrats in the state Senate, Patrick Marley writes, stay out of Wisconsin until Friday, they could undermine a key provision of Walker's plan to fix the state budget and take away most of public workers' union rights. Meanwhile, Republicans who control the state Senate sought yesterday to put pressure on the Democrats in Illinois with their own leveraging points by planning action on a full calendar of undisclosed bills for tomorrow. Well, we already have all four phone lines going. We'll get to as many calls as we can. And our guest this hour is reporting from Madison, where he is the Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick Marley is our guest. Our phone number, keep it in mind, 800-486-8655. We also have comments being circulated on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And if you can't get to a phone this morning and you would like to send a message via email, you can. That is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Patrick, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're in Madison?
Yes, I'm in the Capitol.
Events planned for today, mostly at noon and 5 o'clock. Are there other things going on this morning?
Right now, there's a few people around. I mean, it'd be a lot by normal standards, but not many compared to what we've seen for the past week. I'm sure that that will heat up as the day goes on. It is a furlough day for many state employees today. Madison teachers still aren't in, so I would expect sizable crowds once again.
And let's just talk about the crowds for a moment. I have just been amazed how many people have been in Madison. These crowds are huge. Why?
Well, it takes away, it changes the collective bargaining law in a pretty big way, and you've got a lot of state, local employees, a lot of school teachers, and they're coming out to say something about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think we've seen any kind of protest like this in anybody's memory, really, unless you go back to the Vietnam War era.
Right, which is in my memory. I'm that old,
well,
but I think you're probably right.
There are comparisons to the size there, but it was over a very different issue.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I'd say there's no comparison.
Exactly. We hear this phrase, right to work. Does this legislation essentially make Wisconsin a right to work state? And if so, what does that mean?
No, it doesn't make Wisconsin a right to work state, but the unions, the private sector unions, are concerned that if the legislature is willing to take this step, that the next step could be to make it a right to work state, which would say that if you work in the private sector and there's a union at your shop, you don't have to join the union. Right now, they can have collective bargaining agreements that say if you work here, you have to be a member of the union, you have to pay your dues, or if you're not a member of the union, you still have to pay an amount equivalent to your dues. And the unions would be concerned that if they made it a right to work state, that they would see substantially less money than they do.
Mm-hmm. You write today about bargaining chips, the chips the Republicans have and the chips that the Democrats have. What are they?
Well, the Democrats, of course, fled the state on Thursday to Illinois, and there's 14 of them. They 33 members of the Senate. You need 20 to pass a fiscal bill. So Republicans have 19. The Democrats won't say how long they'll stay out, but if they stay out till Friday, they could mess up a provision of this bill because there's a bond refinancing in it for $165 million, and that needs to pass by Friday in order to secure the money for this fiscal year. So if they stay out that long, they could try to use that to force Republicans to the negotiating table.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, the Republicans, they can't pass any bills that spend money, but they can pass bills that do other things. And they say tomorrow they're going to come into session and they're going to start passing those bills. We don't know what they are yet, but you know they could pass some things that Democrats would want to pass or that Democrats would want to fight, and they hope that puts pressure on them from their constituents saying, hey, you're not doing your job, you're not representing me because you're not even showing up in the chamber.
Do you have any inkling at all what those bills may be?
I don't yet. We're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll know a little bit more about that during the course of the day. Do you also have any inkling that somebody might be giving here, that you got the concessions on the health care benefits and pension contributions? Do you think that the Republicans may give on this collective bargaining issue?
So far, there's no sign of that. The governor has been insistent that he wants the bill passed as is, and leaders in both houses have said the same thing. If anything, they say they're it's cementing and galvanizing their caucus that that they feel like they're being extorted, and they're not going to negotiate under those kinds of terms.
Mm-hmm. We have been looking at, of course, the protests that have taken place, and they're not just in Madison. I was in various parts of the state over the weekend, and people are protesting in many other parts of the state, and people are talking about this everywhere, at the local diner, at the funeral home, everywhere. People are engaged in the issue.
Yes, absolutely. It's happening all over because you've got, you know, this affects state, local workers as well as teachers. And so, local school districts, you're seeing protests of all over the state.
You were in an interview session with the governor, I believe, on Saturday, Patrick. Was that Saturday?
I was in one on Friday.
On Friday. What did he say?
He said he was holding up well. He looked, pretty well rested. He said he wasn't getting a lot of sleep because he's a busy guy, but he seemed pretty calm and resolute about this. He said he expected when he unveiled this that the unions would fight it hard. He says that if he offered something that had the financial concessions but didn't make the changes to collective bargaining, he believed that they would fight just as hard. So he thinks that this is all just about money, and that he's just going to stand firm here.
Some of it is about money, of course, but the state's going to need more money than what they could get out of this. Are there other plans on the table to make up this deficit? You can't just get it from public employees.
No, there's sort of a two-step process right now. They're in this budget repair bill. This is to fix the budget through the end of the through the end of June. And so they get about $30 million in concessions from the public employees at the state level. And then they have this bond refinancing. They do some other things to shuffle some money around. They've got about $137 million hole they have to close. And then next week, the governor is to release his budget plan for the period of July 1 through the middle of 2013. That will include these concessions here will take care of about $300 million of that. So that's about a tenth of the budget deficit he has to solve. So you're going to see cuts to schools, cuts to UW, cuts to local governments. And the governor says that that's why it's so important to get these changes to the collective bargaining laws, because then school districts and counties and cities can save on their personnel costs when they're seeing less money from the state.
Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, the governor is trying to attract massive numbers of businesses to come to the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin is open for business. Do you see progress on that front? And if indeed he's very successful on that front, doesn't that change the whole picture that we'll be in better shape?
Yeah, but it's hard to tell where we are. You know, he's only been in office since the beginning of January. He's got these plans that he says are going to create 250,000 jobs over 4 years. We haven't been able to see the fruits of that yet, whether they work, whether they don't work. There's obviously folks on both sides who some say this is the path to make that happen, others saying it's not going to happen. But, his budget situation is going to be greatly affected by how the economy goes in Wisconsin as well as nationally.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Patrick, our lines are all filled. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we start with Reed in Clintonville. Hi, Reed.
Yes, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Say, last week, Kathleen, I was the first caller on this same program at this same time, and my comments were that I believe that the current governor is instituting a repressive and regressive regime which mimics dictatorial regimes in other countries, and you were taken aback by that considerably. I hope that it's evident that the man is extremely dictatorial. I would say that those people that are at this very time plowing our streets, neighbors and friends that are out there working for us, public employees, will be greatly affected by this, by the actions of this man. I would also say that I know of at least one university chancellor who last week was in a meeting with all of the university chancellors and the governor, who has said that the university system will be greatly impacted in a somewhat negative way, very negative way, in fact, by the actions that the governor has planned.
So shut the door.
Hang up and listen to any comments off air.
All right, thanks. Thank you, Reed. Thanks very much for the call. Did you hear that? I don't know if you got commotion going on in Madison.
No, it's just that people are coming into this press room, and it's incredibly loud outside, so we're trying
okay.
to keep the,
thank
keep the door
you.
Shut. Sorry
thank
about
you.
That.
No, we appreciate that. Well, his comments essentially that he's a dictatorial governor, and let me just do a follow-up to that, that it seems to many that if you have this kind of unrest in the state, it's not good. It's not good for anybody. It's just not good. Everybody's not feeling very good about things. Does it force people to sit at a table eventually after some of this initial great concern is over to listen to each other? Because that's not really happening right now. So that the governor may give, the people who are public employees are going to give, and everybody's going to give a little, and nobody's going to be very happy. But we're not going to be as unhappy as we appear to be now.
Yeah, I mean, the governor says, look, there's a lot of unrest here and there's a lot of public employees protesting, but he believes that this is going to pass and then everyone's going to sort of take a breath and things are going to go back to normal. You know, whether that's true or not, who's to say? It's hard to see what's going to happen more than 24 hours in advance.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you know, teachers have been so upset here that they have walked out of the job for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
If this becomes law, is that going to happen with, you know, are public employees willing to go to that measure? Are they willing to, you know, do it for extended periods of time? Or does everybody sort of just go back to normal with a collective bargaining law that they're not crazy about? It's really hard to tell.
Yeah. Well, it's also going to become more and more a national issue, isn't it, Patrick? You're going to have Ohio dealing with this issue this week, that everybody's looking to Wisconsin, but it's hard to imagine that there aren't going to be massive protests in other places.
Right, but there's definitely an attempt here that, you know, if this can happen in Wisconsin, that, you know, they've already sort of set the table for it in Ohio to try to do it. You know, I think Indiana's looking at it, Florida,
right.
Some other states. So I think that you're going to see a state-by-state effort to do things like this, absolutely.
Thanks, Reed, for the call. Frank in Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Extremely interesting.
It is. These are interesting
exciting.
Times in which we live.
The I would like to point something out, which is that it's been several years since Naomi Klein wrote a book called The Shock Doctrine, where she describes what happens to mostly what we consider third world in nations when they get themselves into fiscal trouble, a type of disaster capitalism occurs. And the book is called The Shock Doctrine, where the public sector is disciplined, regulation is reduced, free markets, so-called free markets, are lauded, and the social safety net is shredded, all in the name of fiscal austerity. It does not produce prosperity, but it reduces democratic accountability and enables financial oligarchy to do pretty much as it wants. And this is what's being implied internally in the United States, and Wisconsin is in the front line of this. And this has been a long march to the right since Proposition 13 in California, which was designed to make governance impossible. Many of your listeners will have read a small essay by Robert Mosley called Welcome to the Chain Gang, which he wrote as a millennial essay. And he was pointing out that the general population in the United States was approaching the condition that had only previously applied to blacks in America. So, and of course, that was 11 years ago. So, thank you very much, Shock Doctrine and Disaster Capitalism, and it's not an accident, and it has nothing to do with the budget. It's about power, at least in my view. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank, for the call. Patrick, you want to respond?
Well, yeah, there are opponents of this who say that it has nothing to do with the budget, and whether you're for it or against it, that you can't make that claim. I mean, there are concessions in here that save the state $30 million in over a few months and $300 million over 2 years. There's a similar big fiscal impact for local governments. There's plenty of folks who can argue against the changes to collective bargaining law, but to say that it does not have a financial impact or does not have a budget impact is inaccurate.
And thanks, Frank, very much for the call. Let us go next to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Dilip. Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry to hear about your loss.
Thank you.
And I respectfully request that you give me 2 minutes to give my premises.
Well, we've got tons of phone calls, Bill. So
I understand. But I've been in this country for 41 years. I came here from India as a student. I watched this revolution coming to America since the Reagan administration. And the Republicans' main goal, if you remember, David Stockton, his budget director, had said to starve the government, which was they didn't like the Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They wanted to privatize it. This is the broader scenario. And here we are 40 years later are talking about the same thing to balance the federal budget. Coming back to the state level, the argument which the Republicans and the Tea Party and the governor make that the private employees make more than the public employees make more, and hence they need to match the private employees' contribution to retirement as well as health care is false. That is not an apples-to-apples comparison. And second, if that is, assuming that it is even true, let's say, are they asking in this bill that the private government legislator can pass any law that the discrepancies in the private enterprises between the haves and the have-nots, the workers and the management, who the American people have bailed out, that their compensation is adjusted and taxed accordingly? No, because the CEOs and the bankers and the high-paying management people have a lot more contributions made to them in their private coffers through options and all other deals and private insurance and health insurance and life insurance to them, whereas the average worker in their company don't have that chance. So that difference level should be taxed very heavily to get revenue to the state government. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, very much for the call. I don't think it's any secret, and people who work for the state, and you know, we're among them, I must say. We're not union here, but we are state employees. Part of the bargain that people signed up is that you got good benefits. You know, that's no secret. You got good health care and you got good retirement benefits. And it also is no secret that the public sector doesn't make as much money as the private sector. There's a lot of this. You have something that I don't have, and I'm unemployed because I'm in the private sector. And I mean, there's a lot of fighting going on about who has what and who doesn't have what, it seems to me, Patrick.
Yeah, well, you know, one issue the governor keeps going back to is that the Wisconsin public workers pay very little, almost nothing for their pensions, and a small portion for their health insurance, much less than people in the private sector. And that is true. Wisconsin state employees pay about 6% of their premium costs. I think the governor, anyway, says that 25% is more likely. He wants to take it to 12.5%. However, total compensation for state employees in the public sector are about on par. You see different studies groups on the left say that public sector workers make a little bit less, but they appear to be on par. It's just that the private sector makes more in wages, and the public sector has a better benefits package. You've also got to keep in, you know, we're in the middle of this terrible recession, or hopefully at the end of this terrible recession, and we've seen companies like Harley, Mercury Marine, Kohler, Sub-Zero, have unions vote for pretty sizable concessions in their contracts, and the governor's saying, look, the private sector's had to suffer, we've got all these layoffs, it's time for these people to give things up. That said, this fight here in Wisconsin, I mean, there's big concessions in here on the benefits. That's not what the unions are screaming about. They are saying, their leaders have said, the rank-and-file people I've talked to in the Capitol say they're willing to accept those. It amounts to about an 8% pay cut for a typical state employee. They say they're willing to take that. What is at issue is taking away their rights to collectively bargain over a whole host of things.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour of the program as we talk about week number two of massive protests in Madison and Democrats, 14 of them still out of the state, and Republicans saying you need to come back, and both sides getting together whatever their bargaining chips may be, and a great deal of unhappiness among many people, no matter what side you are in this wonderful state. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program. This is the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, an idea that was first floated by Congressman Henry Royce, actually, from Wisconsin. The building that we broadcast from is named in honor of him, the Royce Federal Building. We're going to be talking with two former volunteers, Peace Corps volunteers, who have been working with Return Peace Corps Volunteers of America about their service and about what's going on with Peace Corps now. We continue with emails and phone calls. Here's an email, Patrick, from John in Tomahawk. It turns out that the state Senate can actually vote on anything that's not a spending bill without the 14 derelict Democrats. What better time to pass the concealed carry bill, the voter ID bill, and pretty much anything else the Dems would normally be against? Maybe that would teach them the importance of showing up for work.
That certainly would, putting those bills to the floor would certainly mix things up a bit. I think that there'd be some Dems who would want to come back for that debate. In the short term, I don't see that happening, though certainly if this thing became protracted, that would be an option. The concealed carry bill, which is widely expected to pass with Republicans having control of the legislature and governor's office, that bill hasn't even been introduced yet. So they would need to introduce it. They would have to hold a hearing on it. They could probably skip holding a hearing, but that would be an unusual process. The voter ID bill has been introduced, has had a hearing in the Senate. I don't think they've really coalesced what they want to do with on that bill. But certainly, if and by the way, both those bills do have a fiscal impact, so you would need 20 senators present, because you know, the voter ID bill, you're going to have to give away free IDs, so that is a cost to the state. With the concealed carry bill, you're going to have some kind of revenue generated to do background checks and issue the licenses. However, you could structure those bills so that you had just the policy and then as a separate bill the funding for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they brought those to the floor, I don't know how the Democrats would react to that, but that would be a hard debate for them to stay away from.
There's so much else going on. This is an issue that would have been the subject of many shows in itself. But could you tell me what this budget repair bill says about senior care, badger care in the state?
Yeah, this bill is it's got a lot of elements, and that is one, is that it gives the administration the power to recraft most of the laws on Medicaid, so that the Secretary of Health Services can go in and change eligibility rules, for example, or change what procedures they will pay doctors for to perform under Medicaid. Could make changes to senior care, which is a popular program. And then there's little oversight by the legislature. The Joint Finance Committee, which is the Budget Writing Committee, would have some review of that. But normally, to make a change to the Medicaid law, you know, to change the law, you'd have to go through the legislature. What the administration has not shown its hand as to what it wants to change with Medicaid, but this would give them the ability to do that without much interference from the legislature.
Laverne in Monroe. Hi, Laverne.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Laverne.
I agree with the first three callers. This is definitely union busting. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
I'm a retired dairy farmer. I think they should have unions worldwide, far as that goes. The gap between the rich and the poor is getting wider and wider all the time, and I think that's why there's so much resentment all over the world. And I understand in Japan, the management ratio between management and labor, they got that as a set law, and I think we should have it like that in this country, 10 to 1. In this country, it's 430 times more than the workers. That's the problem. We're getting too many poor people, and we're getting a lot of real rich people. Imagine, the richest man in the world lives in Mexico. Please comment.
Thanks, Laverne.
Well, if, you know, you need to keep in perspective that this proposal here, this affects just public sector workers. To really make substantial changes to the private unions, you have to change federal law because they're under the purview of the National Labor Relations Board. I mean, this is not to say this is not a big change. This, you know, Wisconsin was the first state with a collective bargaining law for public workers that went into effect in 1959. This is a big change, and it would make the unions weaker. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. But it does play against this backdrop of bailing out the banks and CEOs of those banks still making billions of dollars and fourth quarter profits for major industries at all-time record highs last year. So so there's something else going on here on an even bigger level. This is big enough. But there is something to what Laverne has to say, that there are people who are still doing very well, and then there are people who aren't doing very well. So that something's off.
I'm not an economist, but
From the people we've talked to, there's something that's off. It's complicated, but we just wish people could get along with each other and come up with sensible solutions. Here's an email that has come in. Well, we have several of them. Let me read a couple of them. I've got. I'm sorry. I can't get. I got some other big box thing on my screen, so I can't read it, but I'll get it off. Chrissy will get it off for me here in just a moment. Let's go next to Laverne. Thanks for the call. Natasha is next from on the road. Hi, Natasha.
Hi. I'm calling to say, first of all, I'm a mother with a child in public school in Madison, and I'm proud of our teachers. I'm proud of everybody who's out protesting, and we want them to continue to fight for their rights. I'm not in the union. I'm not a public employee. And my family is standing 100% behind all the protesters. And here's why. I think we don't think about quality at all, whether it's about high rail or this issue. Nobody thinks about quality and what these people bring to us or what a high rail train would bring to our quality of life. Second, I think that the governor, I agree with all your previous callers, he's acting like a dictator. And that he's picking on one group of people. Basically, he's, you know, imposing a tax on public employees, and I don't understand why we wouldn't all be paying a higher tax to make up, you know, to help fix the budget, and especially rich people, which is something that other people, other callers have mentioned. They're more, you know, all, it seems like all we care about is profit for businesses, but not, you know, people's quality of life. And so also on the same, on a similar note, you know, we've been talking about lowering the standard of the public employees to match the private sector. I would be interested in raising private sector working conditions, benefits, for example, to the public sector. My family pays an insane amount of money for health insurance. It's just it's impossible. So.
Okay, thank you very much, Natasha. Let's pick up on her comments about teachers. I think this may be one of the more controversial areas in the protest. From what I've heard over the weekend, there are a number of people in the state who are concerned about teachers being off the job, about schools being closed as well. What are you making of the response to that, Patrick?
It's one of those things that's interesting because when teachers leave the job, it has this dual effect.
Right.
One, it can throw a lot of people's lives into chaos, right? Some people have backup child care. Some people have a parent who doesn't work, but many people, have to figure out what they're doing. So that can make some people angry. At the same time, it also can draw attention to this issue, and there might have been a lot of folks around the state who weren't really paying attention. Some people are mad at Madison. I don't know what's going on, and then they see that their teacher is mad enough to walk off the job, and they say, "Okay, this is a big deal." Now, I don't think we know how this plays out long term in terms of public opinion, and the same is true with the Senate Democrats leaving the state. That's one of those things where some people say they get angry because they're not doing their job. Other people say, "Oh my gosh, this bill is so sweeping that it's forced the minority party out of the state." It's hard to tell how that's playing now, and to figure out how that would play if it persists for another week or 2 weeks or
right.
longer. In Texas, the Democrats left for a month. In the 70s, we had some teacher strikes that went for a couple of weeks, and as you can imagine, that can tear a community apart.
Yeah, what's going on in the background? I hear.
Well, this is Welcome to My Life in the state capitol. Probably hundreds right now. Will be thousands later. People filling the rotunda. They just they beat a drum from 7 a.m. to 1 or 2 a.m. They chant "Kill the Bill" nonstop. It gets very loud.
Isn't this something that it's gone on? It's into the second week, Patrick, of huge numbers of people.
Yep. Started on Tuesday, so.
Wow. Thanks, Natasha, for the call. Mike is next from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Boy, there's so much to say about this, but for your guest, who I believe is an economist.
He's the Madison reporter for the Journal Sentinel.
Oh, okay. Well, in any event, it seems to me that, from what I hear, it's as if this deficit suddenly appeared. Now, this deficit has been accumulating for decades, and so now it's come to the point where, and I don't understand why people don't comprehend, there is no money. So, these things have to be done. That's one point. The other point is, it seems to me that recently there was an election, and this gentleman was elected governor, and it seems to me that he was pretty clear on what his platform was going in. So, why are people surprised? And lastly, going back to this theme of the there is no money, we have the classic example of what happens with unions if we look at General Motors. What happened with General Motors? So, I understand there's a lot of pain out there. I've gone through a lot of pain in the private sector. And, what are we going to do? This is reality.
Patrick.
Yeah, your caller raises a couple of interesting points. One, there was an election. That is true. It was a big Republican year in Wisconsin and across the country. It flipped entirely from total Democratic control to total Republican control. The Republicans didn't just win in the legislature. They won big. They have, 57. They won 60 seats of the 99 in the legislature, having, I can't remember how many they had, 47, 48, something like that. A huge swing. And also Scott Walker was very consistent in saying that if he were elected governor, he would go after employee benefits, that he wanted wage and benefit reform. He said that repeatedly for more than a year, probably 18 months or 2 years. However, he did not talk about these other changes to collective bargaining rights. He talked about giving local governments tools and flexibility, but over a very long campaign, he never fleshed that out, and he certainly did not campaign on changing collective bargaining in areas outside of benefits. And then the other point your caller made was that the state has a deficit that's been building up for a long time. There's no money. He's absolutely right about that. The state has sort of stumbled from one budget deficit to another. We do 2-year budgeting, and it's you know, for more than a decade, it has been sizable deficits, and legislators from both parties have consistently fixed that problem with using, you know, a one-time lump of money or accounting tricks. You know, there have been cuts here and there or tax increases, but for the large part, they have papered over many of the state's underlying financial problems.
Our guest this hour is Patrick Marley. He is the Madison reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as a front page. He's had a lot of front page stories the last week, over a week now. Interesting front page story today. Headline, Democrats consider staying out past refinance deadline. GOP plans action on other bills. A very lengthy, thorough story about what's going on this week. He also had a chance to interview Governor Walker on Friday of last week. And just a request to Governor Walker, we have a request in for an interview with him, and I would hope that he would seriously consider talking with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio on this show or on any other show. We will be fair. We will be giving him a chance to speak to people throughout the state of Wisconsin, and I think it would be good for all of us to be able to speak with the governor, sit down at the table, and find out more about what's on his mind, and you would have a chance to speak with him as well. So the request is there, and we encourage him to give that very serious thought. So, more phone calls and emails in just one moment. Mike, thanks very much for your call. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to a couple emails and have Patrick respond to whichever one he would like to. This one is from Jane. Yes, public employees have done well with benefits. I would like all employees to have quality health care and retirement. Let's build things up instead of tearing things down. Let's not pass a bill because the public employees need to suffer like private employees, although I know many private employees are doing very well working for good companies. And from Brian and Stephen's point, you and I, Brian said, as Patrick, have talked about the teachers protesting and taking time off, which they have, but we haven't talked about all the police and firefighters who've been in Madison supporting the teachers and others who would be affected by the anti-union measures Governor Walker wants to implement.
The police and firefighters, that's an interesting point. This bill affects teachers, state workers, city workers, everybody except for police, firefighters, and state troopers. They are left completely alone in terms of their ability to bargain contracts. There's no cap on wages. The current law continues. And when this proposal first came out, there were critics of the union groups and critics of the bill said they saw that as a dividing tactic, that you pit two groups of unions against one another, and it helps you divide and conquer. If that was the goal, and I don't know that it was, it has not worked. Firefighters have been at the Capitol consistently. They have a big presence. They've been here every day. The statewide firefighters union, the troopers union, and the state police union have all said, we're glad that the governor recognized that what we do is a little bit different. However, we oppose this bill because we don't want to see the public workers that we work with day in and day out affected this way.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the firefighters protesting a lot. We haven't seen the police protesting a lot. That's probably because they're all working 16-hour shifts. I mean, the police presence in the Capitol is immense. It's not, there are a lot of people here. It's been peaceful so far, but it's required a lot of, officers from all kinds of jurisdictions. And one of the things that's most interesting is you've got people working side by side who would be affected differently by this bill, because you have, Dane County sheriff's deputies and Madison cops working side by side, and they would be exempt from the changes to the collective bargaining law, working side by side with the Capitol Police and DNR wardens and UW police, and those people are not exempt. They would have to take all of these concessions. And, by all accounts from both sides, they've been completely professional and done a really good job.
Yeah. Let's go next to Marianne from Muskota. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I'm a state worker, and I'm a unionized state worker. And I want to just bring up the fact that there's still so much misinformation out there I have sat and listened to Walker supporters accuse state workers of being lazy and getting a lot without doing much. Let me tell you how hard I work. I've been a unionized state worker for 10 years. I'm at the top of my pay scale. I got nowhere to go. And I'm sitting at home today because the government has told me they don't have any money to pay me. And, you know, how much does that happen to the public sector? You know, we're all feeling it the same way. It might manifest itself differently, but we're feeling the pains just as much as any private worker out there.
Yeah, state workers have taken furlough days, and that's a significant pay cut, particularly for those who don't make very much money as a state worker. It's not as though sacrifices have not already been made, plus no raises for years now. Patrick.
Yeah, that's true. The last budget included 8 days of furloughs every year, or for each of the 2 years. That's about a 3.5% pay cut for everybody. I think there's a radio ad or a TV ad that came out right when Walker proposed this that said state workers have taken no sacrifice. Look no further than the furloughs to show that they have.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Sherman is next in Oconomowoc. Hi, Sherman.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Sherman.
I guess my concern is that we have a 144-page bill, and we are discussing just one, possibly two items on that bill. And I'm speaking from the perspective of a retired teacher. This morning I had just read an email link that provided Section 31 of one of the amendment of the budget repair bill. And it, as I read that, allows for discrimination based on sexual orientation for public authorities, for example, the Bradley Sports Authority, and I think there were probably at least a half dozen more. So if those kind of provisions are in the bill, what else is in there, and why isn't the media looking beyond just the budget crisis thing?
Are there things we should be looking at? Are you familiar with what the caller's talking
about? I don't know what
about?
He's talking about there. I haven't
heard that either.
Of that bill. I'm not sure if that's the same bill or if that's a proposed amendment that hasn't been adopted. I have not heard of either.
Yeah, if you want to send us some,
closely.
We don't know about it either, Sherman, so send that to us. But he makes a point about all the other parts of the bill. We've concentrated on this. Are there other parts of this bill that we ought to be looking at more carefully?
Well, we talked about the Medicaid provision. That if that were proposed on its own, that would be a big deal, and our paper would certainly be all over it. We have tried to, you know, write quite a bit about it, but with everything going on, we probably haven't dug into it as much as what we otherwise would have. There was a provision in this bill originally to take away all benefits for limited-term employees. Now, that sounds like, you know, people who are working 3 weeks at a time or short-term, and in many cases it is, but limited-term employees also can work for years for the states, 5 years or more on a full-time basis, and they got, they had health care benefits, and this would have taken that away. They actually amended the bill to change that. Another provision in this bill creates a civil service system at the local level. This was a recent addition to the bill after all of the complaints by organized labor, so that the state has a, you know, first-in-the-nation civil service system. Local governments can create them by ordinance. This bill mandates that local governments create those civil service systems within a matter of months. That'd be a big change. There's this refinancing deal. There's odd provision about this wetlands bill that passed recently up in Brown County. There's a lot of pieces here. It is a big bill.
And what's the big deal about the civil service system? I know the government has talked about that. I've read different opinions on it. Why is it a big deal?
Well, before we had a civil service system, you had, patronage employees at all levels of government. You hear, just think about the Chicago in the old days, or maybe the not so old days. And so a civil service system says, things are based on merit. When you hire people who are truly qualified, once they are hired, they have protections from not being fired because they embarrassed their boss or, did something that was politically unpopular, but, they're only fired for just cause. obviously in union contracts you have a lot of protections on being hired for just or being fired for just cause,
right.
Or for you know, your boss is having a true reason for ever disciplining you. And so the Republicans put this civil service system in at the local level to make sure that people would have those kinds of protections that everybody really expects for government employees.
So is the recourse the same if you get fired for having a political viewpoint that's at odds with your boss? You have access to what?
Well, you shouldn't be fired at all. I mean, you'd probably have a federal issue there, too, if you were fired for your political views for most state jobs. It's not the same as a union contract by any means. A union contract will say how much overtime you can work, how many, you know, what hours you work, who's called in for overtime first. At correctional facilities, they'll have security type of provision. So there's a whole host of things that are in union contracts that are not in a civil service system. But a
mm-hmm.
civil service system does ensure that people have an appeals process if they're disciplined in a way that they feel is unfairly.
Barb in Ashland is next. Hello, Barb.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call this
morning. Of course.
I think I have a different perspective than some of the callers. I actually served on a school board for 8 years and was directly responsible for negotiating with the teachers union and the other unions in the district. And what the governor is trying to do to the collective bargaining law is absolutely wrong. It is not the American way. It is not the Wisconsin way. Yes, it was irritating to have to take all that time away from my family to negotiate with these various unions, but that was my job as an elected official. And, you know, are all unions good? No, they're not. But we deserve to give our teachers the best pay they can and the best benefits they can. And just on a personal note, I'm one of those people who will be affected by this bill because I have Badger Care. I have been unable to get health insurance since 1991. And that's all I need to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. You want to respond?
Sure. You have been hearing from people like the caller who have served in local government or state government who say, you know, what the law, collective bargaining laws that we've had on the books for 50 years have done is bought labor peace. You don't see the kinds of things like we're seeing right now with teachers walking out of the job. You have, you can be confident that your garbage is going to be picked up. You can be confident that the firefighters are going to show up if your house catches on fire. And that's, you know, one of the trade-offs with having collective bargaining. So I have heard from other folks who serve on school boards and do those kinds of things who feel the way as your caller. The governor points out this morning, he put out a release and said, you know, many of the school teachers around the state get an insurance plan through the WEA Trust, which is connected with WEAC, the teachers' union, and a lot of school districts have found that they could save substantial dollars, millions of dollars, if they move them from that system either into the private market or into the state healthcare system. And they've tried to bargain for that. The teachers' union has been very strong and wanted to keep it into their own system. And so the governor says, you know, this is an example of where a typical employee would enjoy benefits that are as good as what they've had, and yet the taxpayers would save millions of dollars. And that's an example he uses of why we need to have this wholesale change of collective bargaining rights.
Because politics is always on our minds, and this is our All Things Political show. Arlen in Green Bay, do you think the union protests in Madison and the Democratic senators leaving the state will hurt the Democrats further in the next state election?
You're asking me that?
Yes,
sorry.
Yes, I'm asking
I'm
you.
I had a caller there.
No.
I don't know, because, you've already got both sides attempting, saying that they're starting the process to recall senators. You got the CRG network out of Milwaukee working on recalling Bob Worching, Kenosha County, and Jim Holprin from up north, saying these guys aren't doing their job, we're going to recall them. Meanwhile, nothing formally has started yet, but the Democrats are very eager to start recalls on Alberta Darling, who's the co-chairwoman of the Joint Finance Committee, Randy Hopper, who is from Fond du Lac, and that's an area that his district has a lot of prisons and other public employees. So you could see a lot of political turmoil here before 2012. Labor has shown, if nothing else, it's very organized right now.
Yes.
And they've been brought together, and, I think that's going to have a... These people are going to be motivated in 2 years, and they're going to be motivated in the coming months if they try to do these recalls.
Quite a story, Patrick. Quite a story.
It is indeed.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get some rest, and we'll be calling on you again, sir, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Patrick Marley, he is the Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We also are calling on the governor to be with us on this program, or if he can't make this time period, I'm sure that any other show would be very happy to have the governor with us to speak with. You know, we have a unique service here. We're all over the state of Wisconsin. We have people with a variety of opinions. We do have a lot of... we are public employees. We must tell you that to be upfront about this. But I think that it would be a good place for him to speak with people from everywhere, from, Green Bay and Milwaukee and Madison and Rhinelander and you name it. So we hope he will say yes to our request. Thanks very much to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing this show. Many more hours of conversation on this topic. It will be with us for some time. The Peace Corps coming up the next hour of the show. Oh, I have a couple more seconds here on the ideas. We got two different clocks today. Wisconsin Public Radio.